on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is Invest Talk. Independent thinking, shared success. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial portfolio manager, Luke Guerrero.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to another episode of Invest Talk. I'm Luke Guerrero, and today's Friday, February 6th, 2026. Just another Friday for us here at Invest Talk. We got another great show planned for you today. We'll be answering plenty of your questions, talking about the stories that matter, and trying to fulfill that mission each and every day to help make you a better and more informed investor. Now, before we talk about the market performance, and it was certainly a reversal of a day from the past couple days, before we run down those show topics, this show is about your questions primarily. It's about what's on your mind. So let's tackle this caller question now.
Yes, this is Dave from Fryant, California. I was calling about XLI. I own it, and I was thinking with the way the economy's turning, it might be time to cash in. Thank you.
Ticker XLI is the State Street Industrial Select Sector Spider ETF. What it does is it tries to get you industrial exposure by selecting from the S&P 500 and thereby limiting most of its, or rather some of its, small and mid-cap exposure. If you look at the market cap percentage in this fund, 0% in small caps, 1.19% in mid caps, and then 98.76% in large caps. It's going to give you your aerospace and defense manufacturing, your machinery manufacturing, your delivery and logistics services, anything that is within that S&P 500 with that classification industrials. Now, over the past year, it's up 24.46%. It's actually been doing really well year to date, up 8.54%. And so the question is, all right, if the economy is turning, which I would contend, you know, the market's not the economy, right? Market has never been the economy. The real economy and the financial economy, a bit different. So even if the economy is starting to turn, you're not really seeing signs of a breakdown in industrials, and certainly not seeing a sign of a breakdown in this ETF. A lot of what has happened in the market this week, and certainly there was a big reversal, the S&P finished flat for the week. A lot of what's happened this week has been centered around the narrative of AI spending, and really the lack of monetization across the board, and hasn't really spilled over into other sectors. So unless you're overweight a ridiculous amount relative to what the market weight is of industrials, I don't see any reason why you'd want to fully exit this industrials ETF. That is XLI, the State Street Industrial Select Sector Spider ETF. Thanks for the call. Got a lot of ground to cover in the next 45 minutes or so, and it all starts with our main focus point, which concerns this story, the grid bottleneck, AI versus utilities. We've all seen how tech earnings calls have really highlighted a new risk. There isn't enough electricity to power the new data centers. So we'll talk about the utility super cycle as power companies raise rates to build this new capacity. We'll also touch on a story I saw today about KPMG pressing its auditors to cut costs, or rather to cut the price they charge KPMG due to AI cost savings. So what does that mean for the audit industry and really industry as a whole? Stock market obviously looking a bit shaky, so we'll talk about the pieces of the market that really have weathered the storm that we saw this week in terms of volatility. And the Dow Jones Industrial crossed 50,000 for the first time. We'll talk about the journey should we have time at the end of the show. We also have got some voice bank calls ready to play, including one on RBRK, which is Rubrik Inc., and another about preferred stocks. As always, we'll answer questions from the Invest Talk YouTube channel comment section, and hopefully we'll hear from some of you live throughout the show. Well, it's Friday, and we still have things to look into before we wrap up the day, but now we're going into a break. Please remember, you can call anytime and leave your questions on the InvestTalk Voice Bank. If you're listening via our live stream or possibly on AM 1220 in the Bay Area, give me a call now at 888-99-CHART. When we get back, we'll talk about today's market activity.
When you tell your friends about InvestTalk and they ask you why you listen, let them know there are many reasons, and one is parallel investing. From KPP Financial and InvestTalk host Justin Klein. Parallel investing means Justin invests right alongside KPP Financial clients. He makes the same trade for KPP Financial on the same day, at the same price, and the same percentages as KPP clients. There's no front running and no special treatment. In this way, Justin and KPP Financial share the same risks and the same potential for success. Parallel investing aligns the interests of Justin and KPP Financial with those of his clients. Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero are ready to answer your questions about parallel investing. And you can learn more anytime at investtalk.com. The official numbers are in. Now with 62 million downloads, InvestTalk. Listen live or download the free podcast. Call anytime. 888-99-CHART.
Before we move any deeper into this program, let's talk a little bit about the markets today. As I mentioned at the top, a bit of a reversal. U.S. equities finishing higher overall and ending near their best levels, and really more than reversing those sharp declines that we saw on Thursday. In fact, and I already said it, the S&P finished little change for the week in spite of volatility. NASDAQ a bit lower, but the Dow and the equal weight S&P logged fresh all-time highs. The Dow is up 247 today, S&P 500 up 197, NASDAQ up 218, Russell 2000 surging 3.6%. Diving a bit deeper, it looks like some of the best pockets of performance included the broader AI space, small caps, retail investor favorites, and some of those most shorted names that were really beaten down over the past couple days. Other strong areas include semis, banks, private equity, airlines, and computing. Big tech mixed, Amazon the big decliner, while Nvidia fared pretty well on the day. And in terms of underperformers, we had Medicaid MCOs, we got some exchange names, home builders, as well as PNC insurance. On the bond side, treasuries mostly weaker. We did see some curve flattening, though it did come a bit off of the worst levels that we saw midday. Yields were up about 2 to 3 basis points, focused on the short end of the curve. At the same time, the dollar was down 20 basis points. Gold finished up 1.2%. Silver up 20 basis points, and crude oil settled up 40 basis points, reversing some of those declines that we saw earlier in the trading session. What really drove the market today? Well, it was the feeling that there was a bit of a bottoming in software. It was a focus, you know, as groups attempted to break 7 straight declines. Bit of a pickup in commentary. We saw a lot of discussion about very oversold conditions, and some pushback against some of the more dire predictions revolving around that AI competition that was part and parcel for why the market was doing what it was doing. In addition, you had elevated hyperscaler CapEx, still a positive for the broader AI trade. You saw that in Amazon's earnings. And that really helped semis recoup a lot of the week's declines. Amazon, Google takeaways also added some support for the improving AI monetization and dampened some of those fears around reduced CapEx that frankly has been floating a lot of the market recently. Geopolitical tensions, you had the U.S. urging all Americans to leave Iran ahead of talks, you had broadening trade and a run-it-hot policy, the potential stimulus from tax refunds, all of these bright spots that the market saw as reasons for positive movement on the day. In terms of economic data, we had preliminary University of Michigan consumer sentiment. It beat as the current conditions index improved, but we did see the expectations index slip. Taking a look at inflation, the one-year inflation outlook down 50 basis points to 3.5%, the lowest level since January of last year. And looking ahead to next week, some highlights include retail sales on Tuesday, the employment report on Wednesday, and CPI on Friday. Well, I think it's time that we tackle another caller question that came in earlier to 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Dave from Ohio. My question is about preferred stocks. If you could shine a little bit of light on them, I'm trying to produce like an income stream. If it's a good idea, or just your general thoughts. I'll be looking forward to your answer. Thank you.
Okay, well, preferred stocks are a class of shares that operates a bit different from common stocks, right? Typically, people want to invest in preferred stocks because they have a bit of an income focus. They typically pay higher fixed dividends than common stocks and often have some pretty attractive yields, anywhere from 5 to 8%. And so that makes them pretty attractive for these steady cash flow seekers. But that also changes where they are as well with respect to their position in the capital stack. They sit above common equity, meaning if a company goes bankrupt, you would get some claim on assets before common stock shareholders do, but they are below bonds as well. Now, understanding that they are long duration assets, right? Most preferreds are going to be rate sensitive. When interest rates rise, prices can fall pretty sharply, even if the issuer is financially healthy. There's also the call risk, reinvestment risk. Many issues are callable, meaning companies can redeem them if rates fall, forcing investors to reinvest at lower yields. Then you got to worry about credit. You got to worry about sector concentration. They work best as more of a supplemental income tool, not really a core holding. It's ideal for those investors who are seeking yield while, you know, taking a moderate risk, but not really for those who need principal stability, inflation protection, or really even liquidity because they tend to be far less liquid. Great question. We don't get many unpreferred stocks, but thanks for the call. Look at that. We got plenty of time. Why don't we answer another question now?
Question for the show, Mark from San Diego, Micron Technology, MU. It's a lot of buzz about the future of chips that they're making. It's supposed to be the only game in town. They seem to be overpriced and having some pullback, but I'd like to get your thoughts on it. If it is worth a look, or what would price entry would be on it for a small position? Thanks. Listen on the show.
Micron Technology has had quite the positive performance recently. It's done very well. It is a leading semiconductor memory and storage company, so they make DRAM, NAND, flash, and high bandwidth memory. It's one of the few major global suppliers in an industry that has a lot of high barriers to entry, not just because of input costs, but also because of the required technological understanding and ability to develop these very complex and small products. Year to date, up 38.29%, up 317.49% over the past 52 weeks. It was a name that we held at one point in one of our strategies. Wish we continued to hold it. You know, we sold it probably back around 170, 180, but you know, can't always be right. And certainly we don't claim to be. But I mean, it's trading at pretty reasonable valuation, 7.3 times price to book value, 19.2 times price to cash flow, 10.1 times price to earnings on a forward-looking basis. Now, this HBM, this high bandwidth memory, right? This is really what's been driving it here. Because in AI-trained servers and data centers, there's a lot of demand. And so this has soared as workloads expand, and it's helped Micron capture pricing power and strong orders. They have a pretty strong backlog. It is what has primarily driven this massive, massive 320% rally over the past 52 weeks and has caused pretty solid expansion as well. But these things are cyclical, right? You had revenue of $30 billion in 2022. That dipped to $15.5 billion in 2023. They actually had a loss, not just going all the way down to net margin, but in terms of EBIT as well. So after your depreciation amortization, I mean, their EBITDA margin was still 16.5, but that was a third of what it was the previous year. And then you have revenue peak back up to $25.1 billion and then $37.3 billion. And guess what? From 2025 into 2026, revenue's supposed to double. But the big risk is the cyclical nature of this name. This name is incredibly, incredibly volatile. In the past year alone, it has traded at first in 2024 at a low of 77, reaching 133, then back down to 68 in 2025, now trading at 394. And so, you know, you're in an area where there is a bit of cyclicality. There is potential overblown demand because these things tend to shift pretty quickly, but I wouldn't say it's too heavily valued here. I think the memory space, if you can stomach the volatility, can be a good way to attack the AI growth theme. That is Micron Technology, ticker MU. We're headed into yet another break. When we come back, we still got plenty of show left for you, including our main focus point, a couple more stories I'd love to touch on, and hopefully some live calls from you. It sounds like we might actually have two live calls ready to go. Can't wait to talk to you both. So hang on. This is Invest Talk.
Luke Guerrero is here, and he's ready with answers to your finance and investment questions. Call Invest Talk. 888-99-CHART.
Looks like we got two live calls, so let's start with George from Washington State. You got a question about Tyler Technologies. You own it, or are you looking to buy it?
I'm kind of considering to buy it, so it went down pretty rapidly and seems to be finally slowly bottoming out, possibly.
Okay, let's take a look at this name, Tyler Technologies, ticker TYL. It is an integrated software and technology services company, primarily focusing on the public sector. So you're looking at local governments as well as public institutions. They help financial systems, courts, justice software, tax and appraisal solutions. And they also have a division that focuses on cloud-based solutions. That's a $14.96 billion market cap company. It doesn't have much debt, only $626 million debt outstanding. Revenue growth looks okay, though it's mostly front-loaded. You see from 2020 into 2023, revenue nearly doubled, and that certainly slowed down. So it's not really sitting at the 14.5% that it had been earlier in the 2020s. At the same time, though, return on equity looks like it's grown from a previous high of 10.8% in December of 2020, all the way up to 13.5% is where it's projected to be this upcoming year. Now, Tyler's core business, right, it's public sector software. It's a bit of a niche, but because lead times tend to be longer, because contracts tend to be longer, although the process for approval is longer as well, it makes it a bit of a more predictable market to be working with governments and to be working with institutional clients. And there's a continued demand for software modernization, for cloud migration. And I mean, their third quarter results are solid, right? Revenue was up 10%, and they did have an earnings beat as well. So you saw some ongoing, at least incremental, fundamental growth, albeit slower than it used to be. Now, it recently hit its 52-week low, I believe, right before today, actually, right? Because it was up 2.2% today. Up back to $348.35 a share. But, you know, it suffered a lot during the drawdown in some of these software names. Year to date, though, it's down 23.26% over the past 3 months, down 25.09%. Over the past 52 weeks, down 43.44%. And from a valuation perspective, I mean, it's a bit expensive at 26.8 times. You know, like I said, you get that benefit of consistency within the public space, but tends to be a lower growth environment at a time where fiscal deficits are already running high. And frankly, these seem to be operating within an area that is most exposed to some of the worries about how AI may draw down previous business models and take away from revenue. So, you know, is there a bottom in? I don't know. We've had one day of positive trading here. I think the other thing that would make me pause before I enter a position as well is you also got earnings coming up on February 11th. And so I've mentioned it before, on average, entering around earnings is, from a volatility perspective, not beneficial. You know, you can't really predict where things are going to go. People take positions in the 2 weeks before. And so I tend to stay away from names around that time frame. So, You know, I'm hesitant. I'm hesitant regardless of the fact that earnings are around. But with earnings being where they are, certainly I would keep this on my watch list, at least for now. That is Tyler Technologies, Inc., ticker TYL. On to Don from Orinda. Got a question about GLD and GLDM. How can I help you?
Yes, sir. Right now, I currently own GLD, but I, just being a retail investor, also all retired, would I be better off in GLDM? Are they basically the same? I understand, you know, the differences, but if you drop $10,000 in both of them at the beginning of the year, at the end of the year, is the difference basically going to be that 30 basis point?
That's a great question. Let's take a look. So the one-year return of GLD is 72.90. And on a NAV basis is actually 73.62. And the one-year return of GLDM is, pause for dramatic effect, 74.12. So a little bit of an outperformance above that 30%, right? And for those of you at home who do not know, GLD is the Spider Gold Shares. GLDM is the Spider Gold Shares Gold Mini Shares. One is a bit newer, started in June 2018. That's GLDM, both operated by State Street. The main difference being that GLD is far more liquid, extremely high liquidity, very active options market. I would say more for institutional investors, large investor exposure, people who need to take advantage of that liquidity, because it's 30 basis points more expensive. And what you get, or rather what you give up for that cost savings of those 10 basis points, is you get less liquidity, you get lower AUM, and you get far less liquid options market. So it seems to be a bit more of a cost-effective way for smaller investors that don't demand that liquidity, that pushes prices to get that gold exposure. So, you know, generally speaking, if you're operating on smaller position sizes, you know, an $8 billion fund that charges 30 basis points less seems to be, for me, the way to go. Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
On the next Invest Talk, we will dig into this story, the midterm year pattern. 2026 is a midterm election year, so we'll look at the historical year two presidential cycle and examine why volatility often spikes in Q2 before a massive rally in Q4. That's Monday. But for now, I'm Luke Guerrero, and we got plenty more to tackle here on this beautiful Friday afternoon. So stick with me. And if you'd like to talk, give me a call at 888-99-CHART.
Things that make KPP Financial special. One of them is parallel investing. This means they invest right alongside their clients. Here's how it works. When KPP Financial makes a trade for their clients, Justin Klein makes the same trade for himself and KPP. On the same day, at the same price, and same percentage. No front running, no special treatment. Learn more about parallel investing at investtalk.com.
2026 is shaping up as a true test for the U.S. electrical power industry, with policy and demand and capital all colliding at once. And so there's a bit of a grid bottleneck, and AI is contributing to this. The repeal of most clean energy and EV subsidies under the One Big Beautiful Bill Act has forced utilities and developers into a bit of a rapid strategic pivot. And those policy shifts, they won't hit all at once, but their effects will become increasingly visible over the coming year. At the same time, electricity demand has never been higher, and that's largely driven by data centers and AI-related infrastructure. That surge in demand, it's colliding with uncertainty over how much load is actually going to materialize. And so enter utilities. They're now wrestling with the risk that today's aggressive forecasts could overshoot reality. Large load interconnection requests, especially from data centers, they've ballooned across regions like Texas, across the Mid-Atlantic. And in response, states are introducing stricter large load tariffs to weed out some of those more speculative projects. Now, when those rules tighten, interconnection queues have already shrunk dramatically. The federal government is also stepping in, pushing for more centralized oversight of how massive loads connect to the grid. And so that sets up a bit of a brewing jurisdictional fight between these state regulators and these federal authorities. And history has some lessons. It's looming pretty large here. There's a lot of comparisons being drawn to the early 2000s when utilities overbuilt infrastructure for an internet boom that didn't materialize as much as people thought it would. Now, early signs suggest data center demand may grow a bit more slowly than the most bullish projections assume. Forecasts for generation growth in 2026 are already being revised downward as a result of some of the less than accurate predictions that were made. Even so, I mean, renewables, they continue to dominate new generation additions, driven by immediate power needs rather than policy support. And that growth is happening despite a sharply less friendly federal stance towards wind and towards solar energy. Developers now being forced to rethink cost structures because tax credits are phasing out, and that means that permitting hurdles are rising. Now, if you look at the industry response, it's a bit of a renewed focus. They're focusing on cutting soft costs, focusing on keeping projects viable. And one of the issues, as I'm sure you're aware, new generation takes years to build. But you, customers, data centers, they want their power now. And so that kind of elevates the importance of load flexibility. Large users are increasingly agreeing to curtail usage or rely on-site resources during these peak demand events. Smaller customers are also becoming part of the solution through rooftop solar, through batteries, through EVs, and through smart appliances that tend to be a bit more energy efficient. So together, these resources are forming virtual power plants that utilities can dispatch a bit dynamically. Now, this wholesale shift, or rather piecemeal shift, reflects a bit of a growing recognition that flexibility can be just as valuable as new steel in the ground. Meanwhile, utilities, they're entering what many describe as a capital spending supercycle. If you take a look at 2030, through 2030, planned investment could double what the sector spent over the prior decade. That surge is drawing scrutiny as ratepayers, regulators, politicians, they're pushing back against what already is rising bills. Traditional funding mechanisms, well, they may not be sufficient to support the scale of the investment that is being proposed. Electricity prices, they're already at record highs, and forecasts show further increases are likely ahead. Residential customers are feeling pressure, and they're feeling that pressure far more acutely than the commercial users, and so that's fueling this fairness concern. Energy storage also stands out as one of the few areas with clear momentum, increasingly central to grid planning. Batteries supporting flexibility, reliability, and large load growth. Storage has gone from optional to essential. And so you can understand how this relates to what we constantly talk about. Not only grid modernization, but how energy demand will affect the utility industry and the economy as a whole over the next 5 years. As you're well aware, on Fridays, we generally make time to fit in a quick rundown of key benchmark numbers. So why don't we start right now? The two-year Treasury yield is at 3.502% today. Last week, that number was 3.527. And 214 weeks back, that number was 0.64. 10-year, sitting at 4.214% today compared to last week when it was 4.239. And 211 weeks ago when it was 1.762. Gold, $49.38 per ounce, $5 less compared with last week, but higher than 27 weeks ago when it was $33.48 and higher still than 206 weeks back when it was $18.06. Silver, $75.84 per ounce, that is $10.44 less than last week. 104 weeks ago, that number was $22.80, and looking back 198 weeks, silver was $23.94. Oil, $64.15 per barrel, $1.42 less than last week. 72 weeks ago, that number was $67.79. 114 weeks back, that number was $74.30. And 213 weeks ago, that number was $66.62. National average for a gallon of regular gasoline in is $2.90 per gallon, 3 cents higher than it was last week. 140 weeks ago, the number was 356, and 188 weeks back, the number was 425. In California, gas was averaging $4.42 per gallon, a 13-cent increase compared to the last week, but lower than 117 weeks ago when it was $5.32, and lower still than 193 weeks back when it was $5.87. For comparison, in Florida, gas is averaging $2.88 per gallon today. That is $1.54 less than gas in California. I think it's time we answer another listener question now.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call question here. I'm looking to invest in some silver, kind of some smaller cap stocks, and wanted to get your opinions on two silver stocks. First one, Silver Tiger Metals, SLVTF, and Discovery Silver Corp, DSVSF. Looking forward to getting your guys' analytical breakdown on the podcast. Thanks. Bye.
SLVTF, which is Silver Tiger Metals Inc., and DSVSF, I'm really surprised I got all those letters correctly, was Discovery Silver Inc. They are both over-the-counter companies. The first one, Silver Tiger, is a mineral exploration company. They focus on acquiring and developing precious metal properties, especially silver and gold. They explore and evaluate mineral properties, mainly El Tigre, their silver and gold project in Sonora, Mexico. And, you know, they can be a bit highly speculative. Discovery Silver, it's a precious metals mining exploration company as well, focusing on silver and gold. They're mining and developing actual deposits. So look at operational performance, drilling results, production updates. Taking a look at the two, SLVTF has indirect exposure via exploration of other assets. Same with DSVSF as well. Volatility tends to be very high. Why? Because they're exposed to the underlying commodity, which is in and of itself a volatile asset. Both of these, or I would say, you know, SLVTF is best for speculative resource investors, DSVSF, a bit better for investors in mining projects, looking more towards that value creation. Either way, especially given the drawdown, silver can be a bit attractive, but understanding the difference between silver, gold, and what drives that volatility is critical to being a silver investor. Let's play two in a row from 888-99-CHART.
Hey, you guys. It's Art from Tucson here. Today, I'm calling in about Visteon Corp. VC is a ticker. I own it. I'm down about 20% on it, but I think the company has a lot of potential, and I'm thinking about picking up more. Wondering what you think about it here. It's a good time to add to it, or if I should hold off or maybe get rid of it entirely. Wondering what you think. Always value your advice and your knowledge, and appreciate all you do for us. I'll listen on the podcast. Thank you.
Visteon Corp, ticker VC, is an automotive technology and energy supplier. So what they do is they manufacture these digital cockpit electronics, and that goes to the auto industry, not just in the United States, but globally as well. Now, it's a small cap. It's about $2.8 billion market cap. And year to date, it's been pretty strong, up 6.10%, up 24.31% over the past 52 weeks. But revenue growth has kind of slowed. In fact, it was negative from 23 into 24. And even though it's growing, projected to grow at least from 25 into 26, it's still not reaching that peak back in 2023. And margins, and they tend to be tight in this business, are tight for this company as well. And in fact, they're actually falling. From a relative valuation perspective, it's in the middle of the pack compared to its peers. Its return on equity, though, sitting at 22.8%, certainly higher than those competitors. Now, here's the problem. One of the issues is, well, the automotive sector demand. It depends on vehicle production cycles. It depends on adoption of advanced in-car electronic systems like digital clusters, infotainment. And so strong industry demand will continue to fuel revenue. And certainly growth in connected vehicles, that's a positive. Software integration in cars, that's a positive. Smart cockpit systems, that is a positive. But there are some issues, right? There are some potential causes for concern. Primarily for me, it's shrinking margins and reduced revenue growth. I mean, from a strength perspective, it hasn't been great going back to 2023. It's underperformed its industry each of the past 3 years. In 4 years, if you include 2026. But it's in pretty cheap. Return on equity is solid. I like the idea. And I mean, from a downside perspective, it doesn't seem like there's much given where the company's trading. So for a smaller portion of my portfolio, I'd have no problem getting some exposure to Visteon Corporation, ticker VC. I think we got plenty of time. So why don't we answer one more listener question before the break?
Brent from Wisconsin here, first time caller. I wanted to get your take on company AECOM, ticker symbol ACM. I like that they're an engineering firm and they have a small piece of the forever chemical cleanup field. And both of these industries interest me. So if I can get your take on this company, this would be for a long-term buy. Bye.
Ticker ACM is AECOM. It is a large global infrastructure consulting and engineering company. So they help to plan, design, consult for environmental and construction management services. So think transportation, think water, think energy, environmental services, as well as the building sector, not just in the United States, but globally as well. In fact, let's take a look at their geographic revenue breakdown. 73% of the revenue from the US, 13% from Europe and the Middle East. So not crazy diversification in terms of its geographical segments, but diversification nonetheless. Now, revenue growth has been slow but steady, about 4% on an annualized basis. But return on equity is really solid, 23% in 2024, 27.3% in 2025, 25.9% is where it's projected to be this upcoming year. Compare that to its peers, nearly double most of them. Really, really strong as on a relative comparison basis. One of the lowest price to forward-looking earnings amongst its peers as well, trading at 17.5 times below its average of 20, just slightly above its floor over the past 5 years, which was 15.8. Now, ACM's revenue comes mostly from large infrastructure projects, from those water systems, those bridges, airports, energy infrastructure, and public infrastructure spending, as well as long-term capital programs. They directly affect its backlog and its growth. The demand for its engineering, for its architecture, for its consulting, it's going to be tied to economic activity. It's going to be tied to public capital budgets. And so when governments or corporations increase infrastructure investment, say grid modernization or highways, it benefits companies like ACM. It is, though, steady revenue, not crazy growth. This is a more of one of those, I would say, boring businesses that you might want to turn to in times of economic volatility. And it's had a rough couple months, down 22.37%, but still up 5.98% year to date. One issue I have is, much like the last company we looked at, it's underperformed its industry each of the past 5 years. Its momentum is not that strong. Now, I'm bullish as a whole on the sector, and I would be interested to see what guidance looks like, which should come out on, looks like Monday. So certainly before that, before earnings at the close, most likely, I would not enter a new position in AECOM. That is AECOM Incorporated, ticker ACM. Thanks for the call. This is InvestTalk. And if you've never called, why not make your first time today? After all, this show thrives. This show is all about answering your finance and investment questions. We need you to drive this conversation forward. As you know, as a listener, our phone lines, well, they never close. So give me a call now or give me a call anytime at 888-99-CHART.
InvestTalk Innovators. Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero interview company leaders, founders, and visionaries. So head over to the InvestTalk YouTube channel and look for InvestTalk Innovators. Luke Guerrero is here now and ready to answer your finance and investment questions. Call InvestTalk 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Luke and Justin. Bill from Philadelphia here. Calling about Rubrik Incorporated, ticker RBRK. They are a cybersecurity company. Seems that their financials are actually pretty decent. I wonder what your thoughts, if this would be a good investment or a good spot to buy it at. Hope you guys are doing well and love what you guys do. Thanks so much.
RBRK is a Rubrik. It is a cybersecurity and data protection software company. So they help businesses protect, back up, and recover critical data. We're not just talking about cloud. We're talking about on-premises as well. Now, it's a mid-cap name. I would say about $10.9 billion is where its market cap is. It IPO'd back in April of 2024, so it has been trading for more than a year at this point. But we don't really have financials much. Oh, no, we do have financials going back to 2021, so that's good. In terms of revenue growth has been solid, but they are still a company where margins are negative. EBITDA margins still in 2027 projected to be negative 0.6%. And so in times of heightened volatility, like we've seen, particularly in the software space, you'd expect this name to rise and fall as dramatically as it has, up 5.65% today, still down 33.2% year to date. This falls in our category of names that I would say, if you're not making money, there are better, not necessarily better, but far less risky, more predictable names that you can invest in. So given the fact that this falls into that category of non-money makers, for RBRK, gonna have to pass. Thanks for the call. Now, one of the world's biggest audit firms, KPMG, quietly made the case that artificial intelligence should lower costs by pushing its own auditor for a fee cut. They told Grant Thornton UK that AI-driven efficiencies should translate into cheaper audits, even warning it could switch firms if prices did not come down. The negotiations unfolded against a broader industry debate about whether heavy AI investment will actually reduce audit fees or simply just start to reshape how work gets done. Audit firms, like a lot of firms, have poured enormous amounts of money into AI to try and speed up planning, automate routine checks, and refine some of these risk assessments that they've done manually, but it remains unclear who ultimately captures the savings. Now, Grant Thornton audits KPMG International, the UK-based entity that coordinates KPMG's global network of independent-owned firms. The talks were led by KPMG International's CFO, who argued that KPMG's books were relatively straightforward and familiar after years of audits. They also said that Grant Thornton should already know the business well enough to complete the audit faster, especially with new technologies in place. KPMG International paid about $357,000 for its audit in 2025, down from roughly $416,000 the prior year. So that's already a 14% decline, and that drop stands out in an environment where audit fees across Europe have generally been rising, according to industry data. So this episode, yes, it could embolden corporate clients to demand similar concessions as AI adoption spreads throughout these professional services. But it's more of a lesson not just about auditing, but about the economy as a whole, the market as a whole. And that even if the Goldilocks scenario of what is possible from this technology does not manifest itself, it will increasingly turn to a tool, or is likely to turn to into a tool that increases productivity, may allow companies to cut down on their workforce, and generally lead to more profitable work. And so the question needs to be asked now, if value is being created, or rather if costs are being saved, who is going to get the benefit of that? And how should we adjust our outlooks on the economy, on markets, and on individual companies accordingly? Well, that does it for another week of Invest Talk and another wonderful Friday answering your finance and investment questions. Justin and I thank you and encourage you to tell your friends and family members about our free podcast downloads. As always, you can get them at iTunes, you can get them at Spotify. And while you're over there, please be sure to leave us a rate and review on iTunes. That really helps us out. We have been trying new things over there on our YouTube channel, so we'd love for you to check out the Invest Talk YouTube channel. And we got more new things we're going to start doing starting next week. So stay tuned for some of those updates. We've also been highlighting parallel investing, the idea that we invest our money alongside our clients in the same strategies, trade the same stocks on the same day with the same percentages, really putting skin in the game, aligning our interest. It's unique in this industry. So if that sounds interesting, head over to investtalk.com and schedule a portfolio review. We would love to discuss that further. Independent thinking, shared success. This is InvestTalk. Enjoy your weekend.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.